one. Okay, I guess we'll start. The shiur today is sponsored by Rabbi Shlomo and Shani Wallman in memory of Shani's father, Rafael Aryeh Leib ben Yehoshua, Rabbi Leib Adler Olav HaShalom, on the occasion of his yahrzeit. And the annual series is sponsored by Jake and Karen Abelevitz in memory of Jake's parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, and in the zchus of our learning together, the neshamas should indeed have an aliyah. All right, I'm going to share my screen with you in a moment. We're going to take a look today at Parshas Korach, and most often Parshas Korach is used to talk about how terrible machlokas is. Machlokas is terrible. However, I want to look at an interesting thought which is developed in a sefer called Chamudei Daniel by Rabbi Daniel Stein from YU. And he cites a few very interesting thoughts from the world of Mussar, which we'll get to, towards the end. But I want to start our discussion with just reading the opening psukim of Parshas Korach, and I'll share my screen with you now. Okay, so let's just read the psukim together. I'm not going to read a lot. We'll read maybe the opening 10-15 psukim, make a couple of comments, and then we'll get into it. Parsha begins. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kehas. Can everybody see? Either have a chumash in front of you, or can you see my screen? Yes? Okay. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahas ben Levi v'dasan v'aviram b'nei Aliyav v'on ben Peles b'nei Reuven. And Korach and this whole cohort came forth. I'm translating this a little bit loosely to dispute with Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayakumu lifnei Moshe v'anoshim b'nei Yisrael chamishim u'masayim nesiei Eida. And they came together with 250 of the princes, of the chieftains, of the men, of the chosen. These are significant personages who are involved in this dispute. And it's important to note that the Torah goes out of its way to tell us this. These were anashim. Anashim means men, but it's often used to mean people of renown. Chamishim asayim nisiei eda. That's clearly people of renown. Kriye moed, also people of renown. Anshe shem, people of renown. So the pasuk tells us multiple times, not just once, but in three different ways, is making the point that these are people of renown. Indeed, Korach in the opening pasuk, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahas ben Levi, right, is telling us also that Korach is not just significant in his own right, but he's ben Yitzhar ben Kahas ben Levi. So here we have in our two opening psukim, in multiple ways, the Torah is telling us about the significance of the people that are involved in this machlokas. Vayikalu al Moshe ve'al Aaron vayomer aleihem rav lachem ki chol eida kulam kedoshim uvesocham Hashem umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. And the pshat of the pasuk is that their simple complaint against Moshe Rabbeinu is that you've taken too much. Rav lachem, you've taken too much for yourselves, and therefore, Lamad madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. Why do you raise yourselves above everybody else? So it seems to be on one level a pretty simple dispute that these people feel that Moshe and Aaron should not be lording themselves over the rest of the people. Let's read it again, just on a pshat level here. Vayomer aleihem rav lachem Ki chol ha'eda kulam kedoshim. What's the essential complaint over here? Rav Lachem. What does Rav Lachem mean? Just call it out. What does Rav Lachem mean?
Enough for you.
Enough for you. In other words, it seems from the opening gambit here of the complaint, it's not that they're upset that Moshe and Aaron or that their family is in a leadership position, but they've taken too much. Too much. But then the complaint continues, and it doesn't seem to follow suit. Ki chol ha'eda kulam kedoshim. We are all holy people. Umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. So, you know, are they upset that Moshe is in a position of leadership or too much leadership? And if it's too much leadership, then what is the meaning of kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim? Everybody is holy. So if everybody is holy, then nobody should be a leader. In other words, what's the point here? It seems like there are two different tacks. Rav Lachem, you've taken too much for yourself. And Kichol Ha'eda Kulam Kedoshim, everybody is holy. Now there's a machlokas, the Mefarshim, exactly what is the too much over here. So some say Rav Lachem means that you've taken, you know, too much of a position. You have too much authority, too much power. Others say Rav Lachem is that your position gives you too much. There are too many perks that you have. You know, you get the truma. You get the begadim. You get a lot of stuff. There are a lot of perks here that come along with being in your position. Kahuna and Levia, you get the meisers. There's a lot that you get being in your position. So perhaps it's a complaint about position and power, or perhaps it's a complaint about the perks of that position and power, getting the truma, getting the meiser. But in either case, what's the kulam kedoshim here? If it's a complaint against Moshe and Aharon for getting something or too much of something, so then what's the argument here that everybody is kodesh? So if everybody is kodesh, then everybody should get it. But of course, that's not what's being argued over here. Madua tisnasu al kal Hashem. Why are you lording it over kal Hashem? The Abarbanel says that Rav Lachem means that we are now going to speak up. If I understood the Abarbanel correctly, we're now going to speak up. We're not going to be silent anymore. You know, we're going to make our peace known. So if that's the case, then Rav Lachem, you know, doesn't mean that you've taken too much. Rav Lachem means you now have a bar plukta. You now have somebody on the other side that's going to speak up and make the case. And here is our case. Kulam kedoshim. Everyone here is holy. Umadua tisnasu al kal Hashem. Okay. Another one of the Mefarshim, Rabbeinu Paltiel, says that Rav Lachem means that there's a Rav Umore, a Talmud Chacham. So in other words, Vayomer Alehem, Rav Lachem, you now have, there are two ways to read this. Rav Lachem could mean that you now have somebody on the opposite side that can stand in opposition to you. You know, you have a Rav, you have also like a Bar Plugta. Okay, a Talmud Chacham of renown. Okay, but again, where I'm taking this is not so much to analyze, the complaint, but to point out that an essential part of their complaint is kulam kedoshim, right? That they are indeed holy. Okay, now Moshe hears, Vayishma Moshe vayipol al panav. Moshe hears. And he vayipol al panav can either mean that he's in despair, or it means he pleads. Nefila sapayim can mean pleading to Hashem, and he pleads. Vayidaber al Korach, and he speaks to Korach and to his cohort, and he says to them, Bokar v'yoda Hashem es asher lo v'esa hakadosh v'hikriv elav v'esa asher yuvchar bo yakriv elav. So he says, the morning will come, and Hashem will make known who belongs to him, who is Kodesh, and v'hikrive lav, and will bring him close. So he says, Asher yivchar bo yakrive lav. I'm sorry, and the one that Hashem picks will make him will bring him close to him. So Moshe's response to the essential claim of either Rav Lachem or Kulam Kedoshim, he says that in the morning Hashem will determine who indeed is Kadosh, right? Hashem will make known who is His and who is holy. Okay. So Moshe seems to be responding to this point about being Kulam Kedoshim. Zos asu kula lachem machtos korach v'adaso. You, Korach, and your band take the fire pans. Usnu bahen esh v'simol en kedaros, and they're going to do the test about bringing the kedaros incense offerings and see if it will be accepted or not. V'haya ha'ish asher yivchar Hashem hu hakadosh, and it will be the one that God picks, hu hakadosh. Hu HaKadosh, he's going to be the Holy One. So, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi. And now, Moshe sort of turns it on its head. So, their complaint was Kulam Kedoshim. And Moshe comes back and says, Hashem will determine who's Kadosh, who's holy. And then, says Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, you have gone too far, B'nei Levi. In other words, you also have gone too far in what you want to do, right? Rav Lachem. Of course, you have the position of Leviim, and now you want more than that, Rav Lachem. Okay, so what I want to point out here from this is all we're going to read. So, from these opening eight psukim, the essential issue at hand here seems to be not simply about who's leading, but who's Kodesh, who's holy. And the question is, who is holy? Now, at the end of the day, is Korach's complaint wrong? Is it wrong to say Kulam Kedoshim? I don't think it's wrong to say that. Is Korach's complaint of Rav Lachem, if we understand it that you have taken too much, is that wrong? That seems wrong to say, because if they were chosen by Hashem for these positions, then where does Korach get off saying Rav Lachem? But on the underlying issue, which at least seems to be the impetus here of Kulam Kedoshim, that doesn't seem to be entirely wrong. So on the one hand, Korach seems to be somewhat legitimate, or I don't know about legitimate, but he can be defensible in one part of his claim, and the other part of his claim is not so defensible. Now Moshe's response is an interesting response. Moshe responds to both of them. Moshe says, Rav Lachem, you have taken too much. And he says, Hashem will determine who is Kodesh. It seems to me that Moshe Rabbeinu's response is sort of right or defensible and indefensible, or, at first glance seems to be partially a good response and partially not such a good response. To say, Rav Lachem B'nei Levi, you're going for more than what you deserve. Hashem is the one who determines. That seems to be a legitimate response. But what about this response? Boker v'yoda, in the morning Hashem will determine, who's Kodesh? Who's the Kodesh here? What do you mean, who's the Kodesh? Everybody is Kodesh. So on the defensible part, in my view, the defensible part of Korach's complaint, Moshe gives a somewhat difficult to understand response. On the indefensible part of Korach's response, Moshe gives a seems to be a proper response. So while the complaint seems to be problematic on one sense and at least understandable on another, the response of Moshe Rabbeinu similarly seems to be understandable and legitimate and entirely defensible on one level, but to the other part of it seems to be difficult to explain. It doesn't mean that it's not explainable, but I'm just raising it as a question. Okay, what I want to do is I want to move off of this for a moment. I want to move to the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos about the machlokas of Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu, and then we're going to come back and we'll take a look at these psukim again in the light of how the Balei Moser attempt to understand it. So let's go over here. There we go. Gonna move this down. Let's move this off to the side for a second. Let's take a look at the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Kol Machlokas. So the Mishnah says, Kol Machlokas l'shem shamayim, any machlokas which is l'shem shamayim, sofa l'hiskayim. If it's for the sake of heaven, it will ultimately endure. V'she'ena l'shem shamayim, and if it's not l'shem shamayim, it will not endure. What is a machlokas which is for the sake of heaven? That's Hillel and Shammai. What's a machlokas which is not for the sake of heaven? That's Korach and his cohort. A lot of questions to be asked on this Mishnah, but let me just ask: How do you simply understand what this Mishnah is saying about a machlokas l'shem shamayim enduring or not enduring? So, just how do you understand that? Just simple pshat. Not a trick question. I just want to put out on the table how you understand the simple read of this Mishnah, and you can feel free to unmute yourself and chime in. Paula, what do you have to say? What does it mean, a dispute for the sake of heaven endures? A dispute that is not for the sake of heaven will not endure. Right, so a complaint which is invalid will not succeed. Right. But the language of the good, the language of the Mishnah is a dispute which is for the sake of heaven will endure. A dispute which is not for the sake of heaven will not endure. Okay, Judy, go ahead.
Just that the dispute will endure, so that between the both sides, nobody loses.
Yeah, that's a little odd, right? A dispute for the sake of heaven, nobody, there's no loser. So let's say there's no winner, okay? Or everybody's a winner, right? When you go to the carnival and you're 5 years old, everyone's a winner, right? Because it's impossible to throw that thing, that dart, it's impossible. So, everybody loses, right? So, But what is it? Let's test out that thesis for a second, right? A machlokas, which is l'shem shamayim, in the Mishnah, a dispute which is for the sake of heaven, will endure, and that's like the machlokas of Hillel and Shammai. So there's no winner because it's going to endure. But is that that's not true? There is a winner in the machlokas between Hillel and Shammai. There is a machloka. I mean, there is a winner. Right, we follow Hillel in 95% of the disputes between Hillel and Shammai, certainly between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, we follow Beis Hillel. So there is a winner. So what does it mean? I mean, Judy's correct in the way the Mishnah seems to the way the Mishnah seems to read in its simple read, it seems that the machlokas endures, but the fact of the matter is we do have a winner. Yeah, go ahead, Marjorie. What do you want to say?
But right now we follow Hillel, but they say that we're going to follow Shammai in the future, so it's really not so clear cut. It's not that Shammai, he lost now, but we're going to follow his way in time of Mashiach. So
okay, good. So one explanation to this? I'll take a comment in a second. I just want to respond to Marjorie. Marjorie's saying, and this is one of the classical Mefarshim, that that in the the time of Mashiach, right now we follow Hillel, but in the time of Mashiach we will follow Shammai. He's more correct. But Marjorie, there still is a winner, right? In other words, okay, maybe we follow Hillel now, and ultimately we're going to follow Shammai. So all you're telling me is that Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim is that we're going to follow Shammai later. But in the end, that means that Hillel is discarded, or Hillel is, Hillel quote-unquote loses. So yes, that's a classical approach here, but it just kicks the question down the road a little bit. Okay, so now we're in Yemos HaMashiach. Now what? Now we follow Shammai. So now, Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim will endure. The example is Machlokas Hillel and Shammai, but it's not true. We follow Shammai. So maybe you've answered the question now. Tomorrow Mashiach will come. The question will reassert itself. Right?
Perhaps, Rabbi,
yeah,
this is speaking about timing, circumstances, and the fact that Hillel and Shammai, at the time we're living now, perhaps Hillel's thoughts and what he believes and his concepts will benefit the Jewish people and lead to their spiritual growth. While after Mashiach comes, it's going to be a different time period, a different reality, and Shammai's thoughts will be more in line with who we were, who we have become, and therefore his school will ultimately lead to our spiritual growth. For the time being, Hillel's school is supposed to have us lead to our spiritual growth.
Okay.
At this time period in which we are living.
Beautiful.
I think it has all to do with timing and circumstances, and the fact that Korach, at the time when he staged this was.
Well, let's leave Korach aside for a second. We're going to get back to Korach shortly, so let's just leave Korach on the side. But I think what you're saying is quite compelling, and that is that to say that a machlokas, that a dispute, for the sake of heaven, shall endure, doesn't mean that we don't that sort of the machlokas of Hillel and Shammai. It doesn't mean necessarily that we're talking about a legal dispute here, and that we follow one versus the other. But what it does mean, and I think what you're saying is quite compelling, that that a machlokas l'shem shamayim, a dispute which is for the sake of heaven, both sides of the dispute will have an enduring impact. Both sides of the dispute will have an enduring impact. And perhaps, like the school of Hillel and Shammai, it depends on the time and the circumstance. That maybe in this time that we are living, the school of Shammai of Hillel has its influence. The time of Shammai, the school of Shammai will have its influence. But it doesn't mean that at the time of Shammai, the influence of Hillel is now gone. It means that when we're to use a metaphor of a child developing, to say that a parent is no longer relevant to their child. Once the child is an independent adult, now they might not be relevant in the sense that as an independent adult, the adult is making their own decisions. But it doesn't mean that the formative impact of the parent on the child is now dissipated and gone. No, I as an adult am a product of the, of the impact of my parents all those years earlier. And so machlokas l'shem shamayim is one which endures because it is the two sides, both of them bring values to the table and bring ideas to the table which impact the debate and which impact the people. So from a purely sort of legalistic perspective, that it might very well be true. that a machlokas l'shem shamayim, that both sides will not ultimately endure. Shammai ultimately wins out, assuming that we follow him, Yemosa Mashiach. But it doesn't mean that the impact of the debate of the values of the discussion of the thought of the intellectual sparring, it doesn't mean that that doesn't have an enduring impact. It does. It most certainly does. Even if we don't follow Hill. So from a spiritual perspective, the way, I don't know who was speaking before because you're just calling in by phone, so I don't see your name. But
Gail.
I'm sorry?
Gail.
So what Gail was saying, like from a sort of a spiritual perspective, it has, there is an impact. There is an impact over the course of time, and that endures. But I would say that even just, you know, if we want to limit it to this kind of Hillel and Shammai arguing about laws in the Torah, it is that very engagement with one another and that confrontation with one another that both sides influence one another, right? When we engage, so you force me to clarify my thoughts and I force you to clarify your thoughts. It is said, and I don't know if this is written anywhere, but it is said that the Rambam said of himself that his learning, may have been somewhat blemished because he didn't have a chavrusa. I don't know if that's actually written anywhere, if that's just something which is handed down in the Masorah. But there is this notion. So l'shem shamay, the sofa lehiskayim doesn't just necessarily mean about who do we follow. It means about a lasting and enduring impact. Yeah, go ahead, Barbara.
Oh, well, the proof of the pudding is
the eating.
That here we are thousands of years later, still discussing both Hillel and Shammai. So I guess I had a little problem with the word endure. Are we talking about, will their halacha endure? Or are we talking about their discussions will endure? And if that's the case, then guess what? Here we are thousands of years later, and we're still discussing Korach's argument.
Right. Okay, so it could be interestingly enough, could be that the machlokes endures. But if the machlokes itself endures, that seems to be, don't we want machlokes to be resolved? Let me read for you Rabbeinu Yonah. I'm not going to share with you I'm not going to do a lot of on screen today. But the Rabbeinu Yonah says the following, that machlokes l'shem shamayim will endure means, hayom yachloku b'davar echad, today, they will argue about one thing, ulamacharas yachlaku b'davar acher, and tomorrow the two sides of the disputants will argue about something else. Isn't that bad? Isn't that a terrible thing to be a bal machlokas? No, but that's what he says. Yiskayim hadavar kol yimei chayim. They will live a life of confrontation and dispute, but in the best sense of that term. Where I'm not living in an isolated silo, reinforcing what I think is true, but rather constantly being challenged by my partner, by another, and that forces me to clarify and get to the MS and truly get to the MS. V'lo od ela she'orech yamim u'shnos chayim u'shalom yosif alem. They'll have long lives to be able to have this continuous machlokas. But machlokas she'ena l'shem shamayim, says Rabbeinu Yonah, but a machlokas which is not for the sake of heaven, yitamu v'yamusu, it will end. There will be no additional machlokas. In other words, just like Korach and his cohort came to a swift end, so these disputants will also come to a swift end. But it's not just about living or dying, or being around or not being around. It's about living a life in which I have an intellectual religious combatant, and I don't say that in a negative term, somebody who is going to force me to be better. Right, so sofa lehiskayim. When you have a Hillel and Shammai, that's great. That's machlokas, which should endure. We live, in my humble opinion, in a particular point in history, especially in American history, maybe world history, where you know, where nobody wants to hear anybody else. We have the ability to just lock ourselves in a closet and just listen to ourselves and anybody who agrees with us. We are challenged to listen to alternate viewpoints because of the way life is constructed for us. Machlokas l'shem shamayim sofa l'skayim means that a dispute which is for the sake of heaven, it will endure because when you are, and this is the other well-known viewpoint, when we are seeking MS, when we are seeking truth, ultimately, we want another viewpoint in the room to be able to clarify and better bring out the truth. So living a life of machlokas in this sense is a good thing. It's a good thing. And living a life of serene non-machlokas is actually a bad thing. When you learn to play baseball, or you learn how to ride a bicycle, or you learn any skill, if you learn it incorrectly, the first time it takes a lot to unlearn your mistakes. So when you learn whatever it is, whatever skill it is you're learning, or value, or moral, or halacha, even if you just want to keep it down to the world of mitzvahs and halachas, you want to learn it correctly, and that ultimately is the goal of machlokas. Now,
Rabbi?
Yes, go ahead.
I was listening to a program, it might have been Tikva or something, and they were talking about the 10th man. And it was something that the Israelis came up with after the Yom Kippur War. And they said, if you're ever sitting in a room and there's a consensus, you're in big trouble. You always have to have the 10th man who's going to challenge it. And that's what their response was. That's what happened with the Yom Kippur War. And now they have this 10th man theory, where if everyone's in agreement, they
got to
get someone else who's going to challenge them.
Right. Yeah, this is drawn from the world of how the Sanhedrin and the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, operated. You actually remind me of, on a very mundane level, when I worked in private industry, so one of the executives said if everybody in the room agrees with me, then you're all fired. I don't need you. And then so it's good to have, you want to have people that disagree. So the Rambam, however, takes a different tack here. And the Rambam says, Machlokas l'shem shamayim sofa l'iskayim. What does it mean that for the sake of heaven will endure and not endure? So he takes it quite interesting from the perspective of schar and onesh, reward and punishment, that Kol machlokas shi l'shem shamayim, a machlokas which is for the sake of heaven, i.e., that we are trying to, we are arguing not for the purposes of argumentation. We are arguing for the purposes not to to put down the other, but rather truly to refine and draw out the truth. So the schar for that is sofa l'hiskayim. So Those words will the reward, the schar, is that those words will endure. And somebody who argues shelo l'shem shamayim, not for the sake of heaven, his words ultimately will be forgotten. So what's the schar here? So what's the schar and the onesh? So I get the onesh. But if you have two people that are arguing l'shem shamayim, what does it mean that their word that the reward is that their words will endure, right? Again, back to our question: isn't there a winner in the argument? So perhaps it's like Barbara was saying that the schar is that their words will endure because there's some element of emes, there's some element of truth to it. It might not be entirely correct, which is or entirely applicable. So which is why we have another viewpoint, but But the reward, the schar for arguing l'shem shamayim, is that the words will endure over time. Now, there's another way to look at this, that when a person argues l'shem shamayim, has and is trying to get to the truth, in all likelihood, like Tevye Lahavdil said, on the one hand, on the other hand, and on the third hand. So usually, most people don't have it 100% right. So, on the one hand, on the other hand, and on the and on the third hand. So when it comes to halacha, for example, but it's not just relevant to halacha; it's relevant to life, and to ethics and to morals and to a life lesson of how to live. So, there is a notion that there is a majority opinion and a minority opinion. But is the minority opinion expunged, or is the minority opinion just ruled against? Right? It's two different ways of looking at it. Do we say that we follow Hillel and Shammai is nothing? Right? Or do we say we follow Hillel because that's the majority opinion? Doesn't mean that Shammai is nothing. It just means that we don't follow his opinion. Doesn't even mean it's wrong per se. Just means that we follow the opinion of Hillel. There's a halachic distinction here. When we learn Torah, we're supposed to make a bracha before we study Torah. So if a person studies only the positions of Shammai, the rejected positions of Shammai, he says, my form of study is that I am only going to study the rejected opinions of the Talmud, the rejected opinions of the Mishnah. That's all. Is a person able to make a bracha on Talmud Torah if he only studies the rejected opinions? Is a person fulfilling a mitzvah of studying Torah if they only study the rejected viewpoints? So it depends. Are rejected viewpoints nothing, or rejected viewpoints simply not the normative practice? Now, this has halachic consequence, but there's also a Musser point here, right? When you and I debate over something, at the end, somebody's we have to live, so what are we going to do? Are we wearing masks or are we not wearing masks? Are we going to have this policy or are we going to have that policy? Whatever it is. Things contentious and not contentious. But the point of the matter is that if the opposite viewpoint, assuming people are arguing l'shem shamayim, the opposite viewpoint is usually not entirely wrong. It's just a question of applicability. And so it could be that now, for today, my viewpoint holds sway. But your viewpoint is not rejected as zero. Because going back to what Gail said earlier, it could be that in a year from now or in 2 years from now, your way of thinking, your approach, what you thought to be correct, that is really now makes a lot of sense in the context of a new environment. So it's a musser of how to live life. Right? Do we live life, rejecting the other side, or maybe not following the other side, but keeping it in the back of our mind as a valuable thing to think about. So machlokes l'shem shamayim, lo l'shem shamayim. To summarize what we've seen thus far, could very well be questions of applicability, questions of endurance, questions of spiritual impact. Question of time and place, and it could very well be the question of whether it is going for MS or it is simply to be contrary. And these line up with each other, whether it will endure or whether it will not endure. There is just to finish off this part of the shiur. I forgot who says it. One of the classical Mefarshim points out. One second. Yeah, the Medrash Shmuel, thank you. The Medrash Shmuel. The Medrash Shmuel says the following. What does it mean that a machlokas l'shem shamayim will endure or will not endure? So says the Medrash Shmuel, since kavanaso l'shem shamayim, since your intentions were for the sake of heaven, you had pure intentions for trying to see the truth of the situation, divarav kayamim l'inyan shikabal aleihem schar. A person will be rewarded, gets schar for conducting themselves in this kind of machlokas. That's what sofa l'hiskaye means. That for this kind of machlokas, you will get eternal reward. And the flip side, says the Medrash Shmuel, is also true. That conducting a machlokas, like Korach v'Hadassa, which is not l'shem shamayim, which is not with pure intentions, Ein sofa lehiskayim means a person will be punished for conducting themselves in that type of machlokas. V'yerdu chayim sheola. They're going to be punished with an eternal punishment. They're going to go to hell. They're going to get their punishment, la'achar me'ev esrim. This is a very, very powerful way of thinking about machlokas, l'shem shemayim or lo l'shem shemayim. You know, a person often thinks about not doing or doing certain things because of the eternal reward or the accountability that we will get. But sometimes when it comes to engaging in machlokas, that calculus goes out the window. I mean, ideally we should do the right things because they're the right things to do. But when it comes to machlokas, the Medrash Shmuel takes this very literally. Sofa l'iskayim, there's eternal reward. Sofa l'sheino miskayim, person ultimately is punished with death and destruction. You know, for engaging in this type of thing, and we'll have eternal punishment. Okay.
Rabbi, so all this manifest in the machlokas with Rabbi Akiva's students.
I guess one could certainly say that because shelo nahagu kavod zebazeh, I don't know if it's entirely machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim, but certainly the lack of dignity shown to one another. Okay, so I want to tie this back now to Korach v'Hadassa. Right, so Korach v'Hadassa is considered to be a machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim, right? Terrible in all ways. Right? We've just spent the last 25 minutes talking about how machlokas l'shem shamayim endures, and that's the kind of machlokas one should pursue, and you're rewarded for such machlokas. But let's go back now for a moment and think about Korach v'Hadassa. Korach v'Hadassa are considered shelo l'shem shamayim, a beautiful example of a machlokas which is not for the sake of heaven. And if that is the case, so I have a couple of questions here. Let's go back to our psukim. Let's go back. I'm going to share my screen with you. Let's go back to our psukim. One second. Okay, one second. Let me try my screen one more time. No, not there. I'll try one more. Okay, there we go. So I'm going to go back here. I'm going to share my screen with you one more time. And then I'm going to... there we go. Okay. So let's go back here and read these opening eight psukim again. So Korach says, Torah says, Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi. Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kas ben Levi is a man of great renown. And the Torah emphasizes his great renown. How is it possible that such an individual engaged in one of the worst possible behaviors that one could imagine? Two, Vayakumu lifnei Moshe v'anashim ibnei Yisrael chamishim asayim nesiei eda kriyei moed anshei shem The Torah emphasizes that they were men of great renown, the Siyah Eda, they were chieftains of the community, chosen in the assembly, men of repute. How is it possible such individuals could engage in such reprehensible behavior? Pasuk 3, Vayikalu al Moshe al Aaron, and they said, Rav Lachem kol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, the entire nation is kodesh. And that's true. The entire nation is kodesh. Moshe responds, and Moshe says, Boker v'yoda, in the morning we will know, Es ha'sher lo v'es ha'kodesh. We're going to know who is with Hashem and who is truly, truly holy, and Hashem will choose them. And then he says, this is what I want you to do. We're going to have the incense offering test. Machar yeh ha'sher yivchar Hashem hu ha'kodesh. The one who Hashem chooses will be the holy. Rav lachem b'nei Levi, you b'nei Levi have gone too far. So the essential question is: it's true kulam kedoshim. So you know what's Moshe's response here? And number two, how is it possible that Korach and his cohort, who the Torah itself, by emphasizing in four different ways that these are people of great renown. One begs the question, how does such an individual or such individuals conduct themselves with the behavior of machlokesh shelo l'shem shamayim? I mean, you know, we're not talking about just stam people. You know, in your mind, think of who is one of the greatest rabbis, mentors, role models that you can think of. And then assume that person engaged in this type of behavior. How is it possible? So, yeah, somebody wanted to say something?
I was going to interrupt you, but I'll say it anyway.
Go ahead.
Could it be that making such a point about the great renown is basically saying that the Machloket was about power, not about funding? And so that defined that Elizabeth, and not so much that, you know, that people get united to something that bad, but by making such an issue of these are people with respect, with power, and they're coming and saying, like, we want more authority, you have all the authority. It sort of underlines the sense that their machloket was about wanting power for themselves.
Okay.
As opposed to looking for what is true.
Okay, all right.
Rabbi,
quite possibly.
Rabbi, could...
Yeah, go ahead.
Rabbi, could it possibly be the fact that Korach and his 250 cohorts, they were using rationalization and saying our intellect is superior to Hashem's appointments? In other words, we because of our ego and our intellect and our stature of great renown, and seeing Shmuel come out of him and a whole shashelet of descendants, he's saying my intellect and his ego, his intellect is superior to the fact that God appointed Moshe and Aaron. So he's, in a sense, deifying his intellect.
Okay. It could very well be. Rav Soloveitchik famously taught that, this what he referred to as the common sense rebellion. That this was Korach v'Hadasso, were basically, like you're saying, arguing that their intellect, their common sense, what seems to be self-evident, should trump the Dvar Hashem. I want to share with you again. I'm not going to put it on screen today, but I want to share with you an idea from Rabbi Stein in his Sefer Chamudei Daniel, and he quotes from Rav Yerucham Levavitz. Who says the following? Says, when Moshe Rabbeinu, to just one more word of introduction here. When Moshe Rabbeinu responds to what Korach v'Hadasso are doing, so I'm just going to share my screen one more time with you. Just good. When he shares, when he responds. So Vayomer Moshe al Korach says Hamaat mikem ki hivdil, says is it not enough for you? and you know, you want everything, and what you're complaining against Aaron. And then Moshe vayichar leMoshe ma'od, and Moshe gets very upset after Korach, and specifically Dasan ve'Aviram. You know, they refuse to change. They refuse even to engage. They refuse to come forward. Vayichar leMoshe ma'od. Moshe gets very upset, and Moshe says to Hashem, Al tefen el minchasam, do not pay any attention to their offering, to their mincha. I've never taken anything from them. I've never done anything wrong. I'm 100% in the right. Don't pay attention to their carbon that they're going to give, to their offering, to their... Now, why would Moshe have thought that Hashem would have had paid any heed to their mincha? I mean, they just engaged... Right, Chazal are telling us this is machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim. Moshe was no dope. Moshe knew what was going on. Moshe understood what they were doing. He understood that he was chosen by Hashem. He understood what was correct. He understood that this was a machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim. Why would Moshe have thought? Why would he have thought that Hashem would possibly have listened to Korach v'Adaso? Al tefen el minchasam. Why would he have even thought that? So here is Rav Yerucham Levavitz has a beautiful, beautiful thought, which I think helps us to understand a little bit between the machlokas here between Moshe, between Korach v'Adaso, Moshe's response, and leaves us with, I think, an important life lesson. Says Rav Yerucham, Milamdenu machlokas Korach v'Adaso lo haisa be'inyan nesiyos v'kavod kefi hamorgal etzleinu. Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz takes a different tack than Judy and most people. This is not about power. Ela adaraba. It's really just the opposite. Tchilas ritzonam. Initially, this impetus, this motivation, this impulse for ascending the position of Moshe and Aharon, says Rav Yerucham, lo pachos mimachlokes hilal v'shamay. It came from a really good place. It was about trying to raise themselves up to a higher spiritual plane. Kulam kedoshim. Lo pachos mimachlokes hilal v'shamay. Korach originally wanted ma'alas ha-kehuna, the position of the loftiness of the kehuna, kedei lehidabek b'Hashem, in order to facilitate becoming closer to Hashem. You can't blame a guy or a girl for having spiritual desires and impulses. In fact, you might even bless them for having that. Vizem vaday midas hatzadikim v'chasidim ba'orech hayeim lios ola lamala lamala. Isn't that what we want from our children, from our neighbors, from ourselves, from our communities, that we should want to go up higher and higher and higher? How many times does the Torah tell us these were people of great renown, of high repute, of chieftains? These were Korach was traces his lineage back to Levi himself. Kulam kedoshim. This all started from a good spark of purity. V'teida, and to prove the point, to prove this point, think about it this way. The Gemara in Sota tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu later in Sefer Devarim is ultimately, when he's told that he cannot go into the land of Israel, and he's punished, and Moshe Rabbeinu is pleading to Hashem. Hashem says to him, Rav Lach, it's enough. You're not going in. And Chazal tell us that this parrots almost, the exact lashon that Moshe Rabbeinu used to chastise Korach and his cohorts. Rav Lachem B'nei Levi. So why is that the case? Why exactly is that the case? So what he explains is is the following. And here, Rabbi Stein moves on to a beautiful point from Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz in the Sichos Moser. He says that we should have to understand that shenichshal b'masha amar le'adas korach, when Moshe said Rav Lachem Sheva b'nei Levi, that was a mistake on Moshe Rabbeinu's part. What was the mistake? So listen carefully to this. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu was the tzaddik, and Korach and his cohort were the Rishayim, they were in the wrong, Moshe should not have said, Rav Lachem, enough for you. Sha'arei haisa b'machlokasam nekuda shal she'ifa lehisalos ulhiskar av Yosef el HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because although Korach and his group might have gone off the reservation a little bit, a lot, and they were wrong, and they were misguided, and they were corrupt and crooked in where they ultimately went, it stemmed from a good place. And by Moshe Rabbeinu saying, Rav Lachem, not only was he contradicting their illegitimate dissent and their illegitimate dispute, he was squashing and squelching their essence, their impulse from the very beginning, which was good. In other words, let's again go back to the metaphor of a child raising a child. A child does something wrong, so you correct the child's behavior, right? If a child does something wrong, you do not berate the child that the child doesn't want to get out of bed the next morning, right? You want to build the child up and correct what is wrong. And so that way the child can live and grow and develop, and that would bring great nachas to the child and great nachas to the parent. Moshe Rabbeinu's error here, says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, is that, pick your metaphor, he threw out the baby with the bathwater, you know, he killed the kid. You know, he berated the kid and totally schmeissed and totally wiped him to the floor. He didn't just negate or bring in counter argument to Korach Vadaso. He didn't tell him you're wrong for these reasons and you have to change, but rather. He destroyed that very, he potentially destroyed that nitzotz of kedusha from whence this came. Instead of fanning the flames of kedusha, he weakened them. And this, says Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, was his mistake. So. So Hashem then says to him, Rav Lach. Okay. So what do we have going on over here? We have here machlokas l'shem shemayim or machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim. So we said, what's the example of machlokas shelo l'shem shemayim? It's Korach ve'adasa. Korach is a machlokas which is not for the sake of heaven. Right. What's the sake of heaven? Sake of heaven is Hillel and Shammai. That will endure. Why doesn't it say that Moshe is machlokas l'shem shamayim? Why does it say, here's an example of l'shem shamayim that will not, a machlokas that will not endure? That's Korach. Korach v'adaso. You know what is an example of L'shem Shemayim? Moshe Rabbeinu. Doesn't say that. And perhaps the reason is hinting at what Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz and Rabbi Rucham point out, which is that it's true that Korach and his cohort were in the wrong over here. But maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was not 100% right either. A machlokas l'shem shamayim is one which is for the sake of heaven. And that means that not only do I fight for what I believe is right, But I have to look to the other side and try to see what's right in the other side. And maybe fan the flame of what's right in the other side and discard what is wrong. That's a tall order. And that's why Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim endures, because it's big. It's extraordinary. Machlokas L'Shelo L'Shem Shamayim, you don't even have to be such a Rasha to engage in Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim for it not to endure. But Machlokas L'Shem Shamayim, let's look on just on the positive side. This is an ideal for us to get to. To conduct dispute and debate, whether it is Torah dispute and debate, moralities, ethics, mundane things, you know, policies, shuls, life, friends. A machlokas l'shem shamayim means challenges me, not simply to be pure in my motives for making my for presenting my point of view, for putting my point of view forward. But a machlokas l'shem shamayim, something that has the blessing of endurance, is one that attempts to see the other side, even if the other side is wrong, maybe to see the point of beauty, of purity, of spirituality, from which that other point, that other wrong point, is emanating. And then try to fan that flame. Maybe even find common ground in that flame. Maybe had Moshe said, "Listen, this is this is Dvar Hashem. This is what it is. I know you want kedusha. I know we're all kodesh. Let's see how we can build the flames of kedusha." Now maybe it wouldn't have sufficed for Korach, because maybe Korach was too far gone. But maybe it would have sufficed for the 250 people that the Nisim, the chieftains, the men of the people of great repute. Maybe it would have turned them. You may not always win, but this is a way of enduring. And why is this something which is considered so amazing or so terrible? Machlokas l'shem shamayim or lo l'shem shamayim? Because it's not just simply about, I don't think it's simply just about whether my intentions are pure or not. What makes machlokas l'shem shamayim so extraordinary, machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim so insidious, is not that we are arguing with good intentions or bad intentions. What makes it extraordinary or terrible is my ability or inability to see something good in you. When I debate with you and I only see something evil on the other side, that's a problem. That's a problem. I'm not saying there aren't people out there in the world but is it everybody? Is it everybody that disagrees with me that is evil? It's everybody? Not one person that has a different political view than me, not somebody who has a different spiritual way of life than me, not somebody who has a different policy than me. They're all just crazy and evil. That's a problem. That's machlokas. I think that's why machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim is problematic. And that's why I think machlokas l'shem shamayim is so extraordinary. Because it's not just about, I believe in high taxes, you believe in low taxes. Okay, we'll fight it out. But it's about being able to see that you believe something and it's coming really from a good place, as misguided as your position might be. And if I can see that, then there is a basic fabric which we can live together and build a society. Right? And that's ultimately, Chazal, who writing Pirkei Avos, are writing in the aftermath of a terrible Churban, which was as a consequence of, as Gail said before, Shelo Nahagu Kavod Zeh Bazeh. But it's also as a more deeply as a consequence of Sinas Chinam, of petty hatreds, of inability to build a cohesive society with one another, to respect one another. It doesn't mean that I think that your opinion is correct, but it means I respect you, that you have something in you even if that something in you is bringing you to this wrong conclusion, but that something in you is a point of Kedusha. It's a goodness. It's a Tahara. There's something pure there. On that level, we can connect. And maybe on that level, we can build something beautiful. And maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned. This is not the classical approach to why Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not mentioned. You know, usually people say, Korach v'Adaso, it should be Korach it should be Korach v'Moshe. You know, but I think that Moshe, you know, and the reason why Moshe's name is not mentioned is because Korach and his cohorts, you know, they're acting Shelo L'Shem Shemayim. Moshe's acting L'Shem Shemayim. How can you put them in the same breath? But maybe Moshe's name is sort of absent from it in order to highlight something about Moshe Rabbeinu. And instead of, you know, out of kavod for Moshe Rabbeinu to say it, you know, straight out, you know, sometimes the absence speaks louder than the presence. So, with that, we go into Parshas Korach this week, and hopefully we should all build in our relationships such that we have machlokas l'shem shamayim, to see good in other people, and thus be able to build families, communities, and a society which will bring about a geula shalema. Okay, any thoughts or ideas before we close out?
Can I say something there?
Go ahead.
So, it's kind of surprising with Hillel and Shammai about enduring, because when you know the history of Hillel, Beit Hillel and Beit